So that was it. The race of the engineers must have been totally bald, so that this priest must imitate them by using a blunt razor on his tender skin. Or had the engineers used DePille cream or something just as easy, for no reason more pressing than fashion? The priest looked very like the wire portrait in the banquet hall. "My blood is of no concern to you," Louis said, shelving the problem. "We are on our way to the rim of the world. What can you tell us about our route?" The priest was apparently puzzled. "You ask information from me? You an engineer?" "I am not an engineer." Louis held his hand ready to activate the sonic fold. But the priest only looked more bewildered. "Then why are you half hairless? How do you fly? Have you stolen secrets from heaven? What do you want here? Have you come to steal my congregation?" The last question seemed the important one. "We're on our way to the rim. All we need here is information." "Surely your answers are in heaven." "Don't be flippant with me," Louis said evenly. "But you came directly from heaven. I saw you." "Oh, the castle. We've gone through the castle, but it didn't tell us much. For instance, were the engineers really hairless?" "I have sometimes thought that they only shave as I do. Yet your own chin seems naturally hairless."
"I depilate."
Louis looked about him at the sea of reverent golden flower faces. "What do they believe? They don't seem to share your doubts." "They see us talking as equals in the language of the engineers. I would have this continue if it please you." Now the priest's manner seemed conspiratorial rather than hostile. "Would that improve your standing with them?" "I suppose it would," said Louis. The priest really had feared to lose his congregation, as any priest might if his god came to life and tried to take over. "Can't they understand us?" "Perhaps one word in 10. At this point, Louis had cause to regret the efficiency of his translator disc. He could not tell if the priest was speaking the language of Zignamuklikklik. Knowing that, knowing how far the two languages had diverged since the breakdown in communications, he might have been able to date the fall of civilization. "What was this castle called heaven?" he asked. "Do you know?" "The legends speak of Zriller," said the priest, "and of how he ruled all the lands under heaven. On this pedestal stood Zriller's statue, which was life-sized. The lands supplied heaven with delicacies, which I could name if you like, as we learn their names by rote, but in these days they do not grow. Shall I—" "No, thanks. What happened?" A sing-song quality had crept into the man's voice. He must have heard this tale many times and told it many times. "Heaven was made when the engineers made the world and the arch. He who rules heaven rules the land from edge to edge. So Zriller ruled for many lifetimes, throwing sunfire from heaven when he was displeased. Then it was suspected that Zriller could no longer throw sunfire. The people no longer obeyed him. They did not send food. They pulled down the statue. When Zriller's angels dropped rocks from the heights, the people dodged and laughed. There came a day when the people tried to take heaven by way of the rising stairway, but Zriller caused the stairway to fall. Then his angels left heaven in flying cars. Later it was regretted that we had lost Zriller. The sky was always overcast. Crops grew stunted. We have prayed for Zriller's return." "How accurate is all this, do you think?"
"I would have denied it until this morning when you came flying down from heaven."
"You make me terribly uneasy, O engineer. Perhaps Zriller does indeed intend to return and sends his bastard ahead to clear the way of false priests."
"I could shave my scalp. Would that help?"
"No, never mind. Ask your questions." "What can you tell me about the fall of Ringworld civilization?" The priest looked still more uneasy.
"Is civilization about to fall?"
Louis sighed and, for the first time, turned to consider the altar. The altar occupied the center of the pedestal on which they stood. It was of dark wood. Its flat rectangular surface had been carved into a relief map with hills and rivers and a single lake and two upward-turning edges. The other pair of edges, the short edges, were the bases of a golden paraboloid arch. The gold of that arch was tarnished, but from the curve of its apex a small golden ball hung by a thread, and that gold was highly polished.
Is civilization in danger? So much has happened. The Sunwire, your own coming? Is it Sunwire? Is the sun falling on us?
I strongly doubt it. You mean the wire that's been falling all morning?
Yes. In our religious training, we were taught that the sun hangs from the arch by a very strong thread.
This thread is strong. We know, said the priest. A girl tried to pick it up and undo a tangle and to cut through her fingers.
Louis nodded.
Nothing's falling, he said. Privately, he thought, not even the shadow squares. Even if you cut all the wires, the squares wouldn't hit the ring world. The engineers would have given them an orbital aphelion inside the ring. He asked without much hope, what do you know about the transport system at the rim? And in that instant, he knew something was wrong. He'd caught something, some evidence of disaster. But what?
The priest said, would you mind repeating that?
Louis did.
The priest answered, your thing that talks said something else the first time. Something about a restricted something.
Funny, said Louis.
And this time he heard it.
The translator spoke in a different tone of voice, and it spoke at length.
You are using a restricted wavelength in violation.
I do not remember the rest, said the priest. We had best end this interview. You have reawakened something ancient, something evil.
The priest stopped to listen, for Louis's translator was speaking again in the priest's language.
In violation of Edict 12, interfering with maintenance, can your powers hold back?
Whatever else the priest said was not translated, for the disc suddenly turned red-hot in Louis's hand. He instantly threw it as hard as he could. It was white-hot and brightly glowing when it hit the pavement, without hurting anyone as far as he could see. Then the pain backlashed him, and he was half-blinded by tears. He was able to see the priest nod to him, very formal and regal. He nodded back, his face equally expressionless. He had never dismounted his cycle. Now he touched the control and rose toward heaven. When his face could not be seen, he let it snarl with the pain, and he used a word he had heard once on Wunderland, from a man who had dropped a piece of Steuben crystal 1,000 years old.
Chapter 17. The Eye of the Storm. The cycles were moving to port when they left heaven, beneath the steel-gray lid that in these regions served as a sky. It had saved their lives above the sunflower fields. By now it was merely depressing. Louis touched 3 points on the dash to lock into his present altitude. He had to watch what he was doing, because there was very little feeling in his right hand under the medicines and the spray skin and the single white blister on each fingertip. He regarded his hand now, thinking how much worse it might have been. Speaker appeared above the dash.
Louis, do we not wish to rise above the clouds?
We might miss something. We can't see the ground from up there.
We have our maps.
Would they show us another sunflower field?
You are right, Speaker said instantly. He clicked off.
Speaker and Tila, waiting in heaven's map room while Louis braced a shaven priest far below, had spent the time well. They had sketched contour maps of their route to the rim wall, and had also sketched in the cities that showed as bright yellow patches in the magnifying screen. Then, something had taken exception to their use of a reserved frequency. Reserved by whom? For what purpose? How long ago? Why had it not objected until now? Louis suspected an abandoned machine like the meteor guard that had shot down the lyre. Perhaps this one worked only intermittently, in spasms. And Speaker's translator disc had turned red-hot and stuck to his palm. It would be days before he could use his hand again, even with the miracle Kazinti military medicines. The muscles would have to regenerate. The maps would make a difference. Resurging civilization would almost certainly show first in the great metropoli. The fleet could cross those sites, watching for lights or rising smoke. Nessus's call button burned on the dash, as it might have burned for a score of hours. Louis answered it. He saw the puppeteer's straggly brown mane and glove-soft back rising and slowly falling with his breath. For a moment, he wondered if the puppeteer were back in catatonic withdrawal.
Then the puppeteer lifted a triangular head and sang, "Welcome, Louis. What news?"
"We found a floating building," said Louis, "with a map room.